Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone, to State of Belief. It's the first weekend of professional football season, and we're charging into the end zones of religion and sports. I'm Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting from the Center for American Progress Studios in Washington, D.C. From now until the Super Bowl, you can expect to hear victory speeches like Tony Dungy's after the Colts won the big one last season.
I just have to thank the Lord. He did it in such a way that nobody would believe it. And we got to give the Lord a lot of credit for giving us the strength to do it.
But not every prayer after a touchdown is as simple as it seems. Today, we'll talk to the president of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, an organization that works with athletes and coaches like Tony Dungy. The group's mission is, in their words, to use the powerful medium of athletics to impact the world for Jesus Christ. We'll hear stories about how athletic programs on every level, from high school to college to the pros, have been affected by evangelical Christian initiatives, sometimes through questionable means and with controversial results. And later on in the show, I'll share with you my thoughts on the Senator Larry Craig situation in my Preaching to the Choir segment. But first, a little background on the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Rather than having me tell you how the FCA came into being more than 50 years ago, here's a clip from a history video posted on the FCA website.
In 1954, a young basketball coach had an inspired vision. If athletes use their celebrity and influence to sell common, everyday products,
why couldn't they, in a positive way, witness for Jesus Christ?
That last voice was that of FCA founder Don McLennan. His vision of using famous and noteworthy individuals to promote Christianity is not uncommon or unique, but over time, the mission of the FCA has evolved. Why stop with the professional level?
What if it were possible to see the world impacted for Jesus Christ through the influence of athletes and coaches?
Listen to Rod Olson, the head of the FCA's coaches ministry, talk about the FCA's method of bringing more coaches and athletes into the fold.
Once you pour into the coach and you teach them the concept of biblical discipleship, which they are now taught to go on and multiply and teach others, then they disciple other coaches, they disciple other players, and now we're developing ministers all across the country.
Those ministers are people like Selena Diaz, identified on the FCA website as a high school coach.
If you love your kids and you love Christ, it just makes sense to be involved in FCA.
The FCA claims to have reached more than 330,000 student athletes last year alone in programs that are operating in nearly 7,000 junior high school, and college campuses. But these campuses are not exclusively Christian schools. Many of them, as you would suspect, are indeed public schools. Take, for example, the Mercer County School District in Pennsylvania. This past week, the school board agreed in a split decision to allow the FCA to operate within the district schools. The three members who voted against the plan said they were uncomfortable with the goals of the FCA, which point toward evangelism. But the five board members who voted yes said they were convinced by the FCA that the organization's involvement would be limited to team-building exercises and would not be encouraging prayer or church attendance. Huh. Maybe those board members didn't watch the same video we did.
These athletes and coaches serve the entire campus by providing their school with team Bible studies, chapel programs, and assemblies.
Recently, we received an email informing us that a similar disagreement sprung up over FCA involvement at Iowa State University. ISU is a public institution with grants from both federal and state levels, but at the beginning of the summer, the athletic director announced that there would be a chaplain for the Iowa State football team. It turns out the new football coach is a member of the FCA. This has caused concern among some faculty, boosters, and longtime Iowa State football fans. One of those fans is Marion Lohr, who brought this issue to our attention. Marion joins us by phone from her home in Ames, Iowa. Marion, welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you.
Now, when you heard about the decision to have a football chaplain, I understand you sent a letter to the university president, and I'm interested in what was the response?
The response was the president referred the matter to the athletic director, and he wrote us a 2-page letter.
What did the letter say?
The letter basically said that we couldn't know about the special problems that athletes face. And we felt, but it didn't answer any of the questions that we had posed.
Well, Marion, who is paying the salary of this chaplain or life skills advisor, as they're now calling him?
As I understand it, at least some of the funds are coming from the FCA.
And is there any government money involved?
The only government money that would be involved would be the premises that he's on, mm-hmm. that is, the office that he uses, the materials, that sort of thing.
Now, I understand that you've been told there's no way to bring suit against the school. Is that correct?
Although the organization of the Americans United for Separation of Church and State have been contacted, apparently they said that unless a student complains, they cannot bring suit.
I see. So it doesn't mean it's a closed issue. It just hasn't been challenged at that level yet.
That's correct.
Well, what have you personally done in response to all of this?
Personally, we started by writing letters, and then the last letter we wrote was a very sad one because the situation we felt had not been solved. We requested the funds returned for our season tickets. My husband had been going to games for 30 years, and he was supporting the students, not football per se.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you got a response to that one?
Yes. We received a complete refund on our season tickets.
So what has this done to your feeling about Iowa State football?
It hasn't changed our attitudes toward the students per se. That mm-hmm. is, we like the students and we want to see them do well. It has changed our attitude toward the state of athletics at ISU in general. We think that there is too much influence of the FCA.
Well, Marion Lohr, thank you for bringing this issue to our attention, but even more, thank you for acting on your convictions, which are consistent with the United States Constitution. I hope others will be inspired by your initiative. It was good to talk with you here today on State of Belief.
Thank you very much.
Now, let me clarify one point. State of Belief has found that the FCA does indeed pay the entire salary of this chaplain at Iowa State on the Iowa State football team sideline. That doesn't mean government money is not paying for the offices, for the field, for the facilities, and other aspects of Iowa State University. Coming up later, we'll talk to the president of the FCA to see how he responds to some of the concerns about his organization. But up next, why is one rabbi concerned about what's taking place in a Major League Baseball stadium, in several Major League Baseball stadiums? I'm Welton Gaddy, and you're listening to State of Belief on Air America Radio. Welcome back to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. In a few minutes, we'll follow up our discussion on the Fellowship of Christian Athletes by talking with the president of that organization. Now, let's just say there's a lot we want to know. But first, let's talk a little baseball. Just the other night, I was at a Washington Nationals game with staff members of the Interfaith Alliance. Yes, the Nats are in second to last place. And worse than that, they were playing the Marlins, the last place team. But it didn't take long to just settle back and enjoy the good feelings that come with being at a game of baseball. A good greasy hot dog with spicy mustard helped me an awful lot. Even though not everybody there was really involved in what was happening down on the field, though, to be sure, some were intensely paying attention, all of us were enjoying ourselves greatly. Our next guest is also a baseball fan and has many of the same feelings about the sport, which is why some stories about Major League Baseball disturbed him. His concern has to do with something that we've talked about on this show before, Faith Nights. These events are held at Major League ballparks throughout the summer. They follow the games, and the message they send to the paying baseball customer rubs Rabbi Shmuel Hertzfeld the wrong way. Rabbi Hertzfeld is with the National Synagogue here in Washington, and he joins us now by phone. Rabbi Hertzfeld, welcome to State of Belief.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to be on the show.
Now, what goes on at these faith nights, and what is it that you object to?
Well, first of all, I do object to the very term faith night. How could anybody be against faith? I mean, I'm very much in favor of faith, but these nights are not faith nights. What these nights are really nights to proselytize for a specific denomination of Christianity. And this group sees the baseball fans at the game as potential converts to their faith. That's why they have targeted this new population as ripe for the plucking, low-hanging fruit, which they can pick up. And it disturbs me because, first of all, it's false advertising. They're calling it faith night when it's really about proselytizing. Second of all, it disturbs me because what they're doing is they're taking one of the great neutral locations of our society, baseball game, where everybody can get together regardless of religion, ethnicity, race, color, sit next to each other and root for the home team. And what they're doing is they're turning it into their own personal proselytizing playground. That is disappointing to me, and I think Major League Baseball is making a big mistake by buying into this program in the hopes of getting a quick return on their dollar.
Well, I know that you have some influence in Major League Baseball. Back in 2005, I understand the Washington Nationals organization wound up apologizing for something you complained about. Tell us about that story.
Well, first of all, if I had any influence, I would make sure the Mets win the World Series. I don't have that much influence. But I don't think I have influence because actually that leaves a bitter taste in my mouth to this day. What happened was in 2005, Baseball Chapel, which is a chaplaincy that Major League Baseball mandates every Major League team allow into their locker room. The chaplain said to a player that if you don't believe in Jesus, you're going to hell. And the player says, well, what about, the player, Ryan Church, says, what about my Jewish girlfriend? And the chaplain nods, yep, that's where she's going. And so I protested against this, and I walked into the office of the president of the Nationals. I said, this is a problem. And he said, well, Major League Baseball mandates that we have baseball chapel in here. Guess what? Major League Baseball, to this day, has not changed the fact. Baseball chapel, to this day, has not apologized for those remarks. They have not disowned those remarks. And we have the same policy in place. Players, professional, major and minor leaguers, former and current, have said to me that they have a deep uneasiness. They feel like it is not good to be proud of their Judaism in the locker room, to be public about it, because it's alienating.
What is Major League Baseball's response to this? How do they justify it?
Major League Baseball has not responded to this. But I think they've struck out, so to speak, because they're not taking a responsible role. When we call them up, when we see what's going on, they refer us to the head of Baseball Chapel. There's no sense of responsibility there. And when I've spoken with individual owners, there has been a stronger sense of responsibility and acknowledgement that if the event is going to happen, at least they're going to do everything in their possible to separate the game from the proselytizing. But it's problematic. Anytime you're asking players to come forward in a stadium, in uniform, to talk about their faith and their connection to a specific form of faith, you know, what do you think the little kid who's there is going to see? The message he's going to see is that this faith is better than other faiths. I don't think baseball wants to get into that type of endorsement just so they can grab an extra $20,000 at the box office that night.
Rabbi Hertzfeld, I'm almost out of time, but there are two questions I've got to ask you. One is a feeling. What do you feel or what do you think when you see a player just outside the batter's box genuflex before stepping into the batter's box and changing sports? What do you feel when someone makes a touchdown and you see them kneeling, praying in the end zone? What's your feeling?
That doesn't bother me that much. They're doing it. It's instinct as a religious person. You know, certain things you just do all the time, and it's different than proselytizing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what bothers me is when they cross the line and they're trying to convince everybody else there to adopt their faith. And at the end of the day, if I'm watching a Met game and I see somebody on the Braves do that, I know God is a Mets fan anyway, so I don't have to worry about that.
Okay, now I've got to ask you one other question.
Yeah, sure.
And this is an opinion one. Salon just published a list of the greatest Jewish baseball players of all time.
Right.
Is there any debate, or is Sandy Koufax truly the greatest of all time?
I think we have to go with Hank Greenberg, because what Hank Greenberg stood for was far beyond being a great player. He was a person who stood for the Jewish people at a time when it was really much more difficult to be a Jew. And for Hank Greenberg to be a slugger in those days and to show Jewish strength at a time where Jews were literally endangered for their lives, you know, was a great thing for the Jewish community. But of course, Sandy Koufax, maybe we'll say Sandy Koufax was the best pitcher and Hank Greenberg was the best hitter.
Rabbi Shmuel Hertzfeld, thanks so much for being with us on State of Belief. Thanks for stepping up to the plate in your way. And listen, I'm being told by my producer that I have to say one final thing to you, and that is, let's go Mets.
From your mouth to God's ears. Take care.
Now that was a baseball fan. Up next, we've got a lot of questions for the president of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and I'm sure you want to hear his answers. I know I do. I'm Welton Gaddy, and this is State of Belief on Air America Radio.
State of Belief once a week, not enough? Check out our website, stateofbelief.com.
If there's anybody that should compete and just hit you hard in football and work hard to steal the ball or to block your shot or slam dunk over you, it's a Christian.
The Fellowship of Christian Athletes, through the influence of coaches and players, use the powerful medium of athletics to impact the world for Jesus Christ.
This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. And by now you know about the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and its mission. We've talked about how it operates not just within professional sports, but on high school and college campuses across the country. So naturally, we have some questions about the FCA, and we'll take them right to the source. Les Steckel was a veteran football coach spending 23 years in the National Football League, including a turn as head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. He attended his first FCA conference back in 1972, and he is now the organization's national president and CEO. He joins us now on the phone from Southern California. Les Steckel, welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you, Reverend Welton. I tell you, I'm excited to be here on this program. I've heard great things about it, and hopefully our listeners will be excited more and more about FCA and certainly the Lord Jesus Christ when we get done here.
Tell me what you see as the purpose of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes.
Well, without a doubt, you know, we have values, we have core values, we have mission statements, but The Fellowship of Christian Athletes is the largest Christian sports ministry in the world, and our mission is to minister to athletes and coaches, and through that, hopefully they influence their young peers and so forth to be followers of Jesus Christ, and then hopefully connect them up with the local churches.
Well, on the FCA website, the mission statement reads something like this: to present to athletes and coaches and all whom they influence the challenge and adventure of receiving Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord, serving Him in their relationships and in the fellowship of the church. Now, I have to ask, how is a mission that calls for religious conversion appropriate for public institutions like high schools and some colleges?
You know, what's really amazing is when you get right down to it, that not only is the athletic arena screaming out for help because of what we see and hear with the drugs and alcohol, et cetera, taking place amongst athletes, professional, right on down, unfortunately, into the high school ranks and beyond. And we have superintendents, we have principals saying, come on board. They allow us. They open the door to us in parts of the country. Other parts, you know, they have a pride issue or a fared issue, but this really isn't a constitutional issue.
Coach, do you have any experience with religion dividing a team rather than enhancing sportsmanship?
You know, I got to be honest with you. The only little hiccup that we heard was a couple years ago at the Air Force Academy, and it made national publicity, and I can picture myself right now being on ESPN Cold Pizza, and it was simply one or two people were making a big deal out of what was put in the locker rooms there at the Air Force Academy when Fisher DeBerry, a longtime, highly successful coach, and you know, we heard as we heard right from the horse's mouth that a group of people, teammates at Air Force, came to Fisher and said, Coach, we want to put this banner up. We want to say that we are united as a football team and we believe in these principles and the competitor's creed that FCA has. And they wanted to really let, you know, everyone know what they stood for.
Was that the one that was the locker room that had the banner that read Team Jesus?
You know, I'm not sure if it read Team Jesus. You know, I don't think it did, but I may be wrong.
Well, the reason I'm saying that is we had a guy on the show named Mikey Weinstein who was familiar with that, and I wasn't familiar with it, but that's what he told us, and I wondered about it.
I mean, facts are facts,
sure.
And I can't physically say it, but I think it was more of the competitor's creed that as a team, not only representing the Air Force Academy, but also in their faith. And there were one or two people, I believe, from another faith that just felt that this wasn't right. And I believe more importantly, I think a parent or two or a supervisor at the academy got involved. But I smile, Wilton. I got to tell you, you know, when I hear coaches out there saying, we need help. I mean, look what's happening in the athletic arena. We need more character building and so forth and so on. And right away, we smile. We say, what you want is Christian character. Character qualities that the Bible speaks about, that everybody speaks about in the secular world as well, and yet they want those, but they don't want to attach the word Christian character. Mm-hmm. And I smile because our country was founded on Christian principles, just like a lot of these great universities where my son just graduated from Princeton, and he had a Bible study there. And the good news is he and his teammates started a Bible study with five athletes on the football team, and last year they got up to 25. And the coaching staff gives them the credit for their leadership, not only from a football standpoint, but a spiritual standpoint, and says that's why they had the best record since 1964, which they were 9-1 and won the Ivy League title, is because of the Christian character that was modeled by these 25 young men that spread down through the rest of the team. And I give great credit to the Princeton coaching staff and their football team for expressing that, and they did it publicly in newspapers.
Coach Steckel, I guess we're running out of time. One more question I wanted to ask is, in a situation like that where you've got diverse athletes religiously and economically and racially and all of that, do you believe that athletes who are not Christians can also exhibit comparable levels of integrity and sportsmanship, the kind that certainly we would expect from Christians.
You know, I'm a Marine officer. You don't know this about me, but I spent 30 years in the Marine Corps and retired as a colonel in 1999. And 3 years I was an infantry officer in Vietnam, and then spent 27 years in reserves. And I got to tell you, I believe in discipline, and I've seen it my whole life in the athletic arena in the Marine Corps. And I've met people who you would refer to as a top quality individual, top character individual with great discipline and morals and ethics. But I tell you this, that when the time when I used to say to the players, my favorite saying is, football doesn't build character, it reveals it. And I believe people's characters come out when it's a really a tough, tense time. And I've been around those who claim to be Christians in tough, tense times, like Tony Dungy. Mm-hmm. And I've watched his Christian character come out. And I've also been around men and women who claim to be, you know, highly moral people and in tough times. And I can tell you this, there's a difference. And the difference is Jesus Christ in their life.
Les Steckel, we appreciate you coming on and talking with us about the FCA and your role as its president. Thanks so much for being with us on State of Belief.
We just want to thank you for the time that you gave us today.
I find myself very ambivalent about what to say next. As you know, I appreciate each person's right to express his or her religion as they want. We represent all kinds of points of view on State of Belief. I find this a good interview because it gives you insight into the passion and the determination of some evangelical Christians to cross very controversial lines in public institutions in our nation to give their own particular religious witness. I also want you to know, because I'm a Christian, that there are many Christians who don't appreciate the kind of testimony that you just heard, but rather, though avowedly loyal to our Christian tradition, have great respect for people who differ with it, who hold other religious opinions, or no religious opinion at all. But we want you to hear all the points of view. You've heard it. Make up your own mind. Up next, what does the strange case of Senator Larry Craig tell us about moral outrage? I've got my opinion. I'm Welton Gaddy, and this is State of Belief on Air America Radio.
StateofBelief.com to send us an email or call us at 212-871-8280.
Is there a typical career trajectory for the students that you met? How successful have they been getting in the White House?
They've been extremely successful getting into this White House. They've had as many internships in this White House as a place like Georgetown, which is much bigger and has been around a lot longer. Every year they seem to take up a few of the spots of the 100 White House interns, somewhere between 1 and 5 of the spots, which for a new tiny school is a large number.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. And that was a clip from last week's State of Belief with Hannah Rosen, author of the new book, God's Harvard, which takes a look at Patrick Henry College, and it's a look that scared a lot of us. That interview, and more specifically that topic, got some strong reactions from our listeners last week. Right now, we've got Mark on the line from Rochester, New York. Hi, Mark. What was your reaction to last week's show?
Sir, I was listening in horror when she was describing kind of what's going on over there. I mean, it's one thing if people want to have their beliefs, more power to them, but it's another thing when you've got this whole institution set up to try to promote that kind of fundamentalism and extremism up to, you know, elected office. And we're talking about a certain number of internships and apprenticeships that are earmarked especially for Patrick Henry College within the federal government. That's kind of a scary road to go down, if you ask me, you know.
I agree. Have you talked with other people about this matter?
I have, as a matter of fact. I have not yet found someone who didn't find it disturbing, to tell you the truth. I mean, it sounds like an exaggeration, but I think out of like the 10 or 11 people I've talked to, have not found anybody who thought that was a good thing.
Well, I'm glad you're talking about it, and I really do appreciate you calling in to State of Belief. We're always glad to hear from our callers, and you're one of the thoughtful ones. We appreciate you calling in.
I got one more question for you, sir.
Okay.
If you got a moment. What do you think mainstream clergy like yourself and others, do you think that there's anything they can do to try to limit the extremes on either side of the fringe? Like, is there any kind of pull towards the middle that can come out of that?
Well, there's certainly, let me clarify one thing. Some people would argue with you about whether or not I'm in the middle. But we are, wherever we position ourselves, trying to bring a degree of rationality to this whole topic of conversation. And yes, there are many of us working to see that religion experiences and enjoys the freedom that it ought to enjoy without trying to take over the mechanisms of government. So, yes, we're working hard at it, both in rhetoric, in trying to persuade people to change their minds, and also in law, calling on people to be faithful to the Constitution.
Well, sir, atheists like me appreciate people like you. I'm really happy with your show. I'll be a big fan.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Our phone line is 212-871-8280. Give us a call if you want to react to anything you've heard on the show. We love hearing from you. If you've got something else on your mind, tell us that as well. That's 212-871-8280. We're looking forward to hearing from you.
Amen. Amen. Everybody together now.
In this week's Preaching to the Choir segment, I've got a few things on my mind about the situation with Senator Larry Craig. And maybe some of these things are on your mind, too. This morning, a friend asked me why the Interfaith Alliance had not called for the resignation of Larry Craig. Another friend had said to me, if the people in Congress were really as concerned about following Jesus and obeying the Bible as they indicate, they would have treated Senator Craig and Senator Vitter exactly the same way. My response was, no. If members of Congress were trying to exhibit following Jesus and obeying the Bible, they would be grieving with the people hurt by the actions involved, seeking ways to help their colleagues in trouble, and insisting that the legal process run its course to assure that justice prevails. These conversations led me to reflect on the most recent scandal and media frenzy. If this is a teachable moment for both members of Congress and those who elected them, here are some of the lessons that I hope could be learned. First, partisan politics should not trump moral and legal consistency. I've been interested to discover how few, if any, religious right websites or press releases have called for the resignation of Senator Vitter, whose phone number appeared in the little black book of a noted madam. I can only hope that NBC's Tim Russert was wrong in his assessment of the situation. Over the weekend, Russert said that Vitter receives support because Louisiana has a Democratic governor who would appoint a Democrat as Vitter's replacement, while Craig is opposed and encouraged to quit because he comes from a state whose governor is Republican and who would name a Republican to replace Craig. Now, folks, there is a real scandal. The second lesson we have learned is that people appreciate consistency. Conversely, virtually nobody likes hypocrisy. Consistency would seem to demand moral outrage from the Republicans over Vitter as well as Craig. What makes Craig so special in terms of the indignation characteristic of the leaders of the party? One wonders if the motivator is expressing moral convictions or counting votes on their side of the aisle. Third, people who know religion well understand religion's disdain for self-righteous judgments at the expense of others. In Christianity, for example, Jesus repeatedly warned against judging other people. Even in the prayer he taught his followers, Jesus indicated that they will be forgiven in the same manner in which they forgive others. Contrast that with the news about Senator Craig being received with frenzy akin to that produced by throwing a slab of red meat into a ring of ravenously hungry animals. Hypocrisy works no better in politics than it does in religion. But to use religion in the practice of hypocrisy takes the manipulation of religion to a despicably new low. Members of Congress and those of us who vote for them would do well to take a step back and think about what's going on here. Each politician embroiled in his respective scandal merits treatment from two perspectives, one legal and one moral. Each should answer questions of legal obedience, but each also should receive the respect and compassion merited by a person in trouble. Now, with the exception of Arlen Specter and a congressional colleague from Idaho, Craig was deserted by even his longtime friends. Why that instead of the compassion of friendship coupled with a determination to see that justice prevails? You know, in some ways, in all of these situations, I find congressional members' carefully choreographed responses to accusations of wrongdoing almost as despicable as the wrongs with which their colleagues are charged. Frankly, I don't see much religion, compassion, or justice in any of it. Well, that's our show for this week. Don't forget, you can stay in touch with us all week long at stateofbelief.com. Go to the Contact Us page and send us an email or call us at 212-871-8280. That's 212-871-8280. State of Belief is produced by the Interfaith Alliance Foundation. Members of the Interfaith Alliance make this show possible. So if you like what you've heard today, think about becoming a member yourself. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. Next week, we'll be celebrating Constitution Day, and we'll find out how some of you are celebrating it too. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and that's State of Belief.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along.
State of Belief. Religion and radio done differently.